Claiming an Education by Adrienne Rich. Introduction. Adrienne Rich, the renowned poet, essayist, and political activist for women, who famously defined herself as a woman, lesbian, and feminist, was born in Baltimore, the USA, in 1929. In the final year of her graduation, she won the prestigious Yale Series of Younger Poets Award for her book A Change of World in 1951 from a jury headed by W. H. Auden. She married Alfred H. Conrad, a Harvard economist, in 1953 and became a mother of three sons by 1959. Her second collection of poetry entitled The Diamond Cutters was published in 1955. In the tumultuous 1960s, she became a great champion of the oppressed by standing for the rights of women and the sexual minorities, besides her participation in the civil rights movement and anti-Vietnam War protests. Her works, Snapshots of a Doctrine Law, and Leaflets were the testimonies of her politics. Identifying herself as a lesbian, she left her husband in 1970, which led him to shoot and kill himself. Rich won the 1974 National Book Award for Diving into the Wreck, one of her most celebrated collections consisting of angry exploratory poems. She began co-living with the Jamaican-born novelist Michelle Cliff in 1976. The questioning of patriarchal assumption, the need for change, and the power of the will were the themes in her early writings until the publication of The Dream of a Common Language, which argues for a common women's language, a concern of most feminists all over the globe in the 1970s. An Atlas of the Early World, The School Among the Ruins, and Tonight No Poetry Will Serve are the titles of some of her poetry collections. Due to her differences with the policies of the U.S. government and President Clinton, she refused to accept the prestigious National Medal for the Arts in 1997. She died on 27 March 2012 at the age of 82. Rich's Claiming an Education, the convocation speech delivered in September 1977 to the graduating women students of Douglas College, New Jersey, USA, speaks of the importance of claiming versus receiving an education, a dilemma faced in most schools and curriculums across the world. As many others believe, Rich explains that being educated is a right, and therefore both women and men should claim that right. Receiving, on the other hand, is to accept, as if education is being offered as an option rather than a right. Further in her speech, she goes on to tell about the importance of educating women as well as women's right in an educational environment. Rich considers the gendered nature and the institutionalized biases of the academia and demands on education that requires an element of active personal initiative. She further argues by stating that education entails being responsible to oneself, not just for women, but for all the students. The speech titled Claiming an Education was first printed in the magazine The Common Woman in 1977 and eventually reprinted in the collection On Lies, Secrets and Silence, Selected Prose, 1966-1978. Into the text. For this convocation, I plan to separate my remarks into two parts. Some thoughts about you, the women students here, and some thoughts about us who teach in a women's college. But ultimately, those two parts are indivisible. If university education means anything beyond the processing of human beings into expected roles through credit hours, tests and grades, and I believe that in a women's college especially, it might mean much more. It implies an ethical and intellectual contract between teacher and student. This contract must remain intuitive, dynamic, and unwritten. But we must turn to it again and again if learning is to be reclaimed from the depersonalizing and cheapening pressures of the present-day academic scene. The first thing I want to say to you who are students is that you cannot afford to think of being here to receive an education. You will do much better to think of being here to claim one. One of the dictionary definitions of the verb to claim is to take as the rightful owner, to assert in the face of possible contradiction. To receive is to come into possession of, to act as receptacle or container for, to accept as authoritative or true. The difference is that between acting and being acted upon. And for women, it can literally mean the difference between life and death. One of the devastating weaknesses of university learning, of the store of knowledge and opinion that has been handed down through academic training, has been its almost total erasure of women's experience and thought from the curriculum, and its exclusion of women as members of the academic community. Today, with increasing numbers of women students in nearly every branch of higher learning, we still see very few women in the upper levels of faculty and administration in most institutions. Douglas College itself is a women's college in a university administered overwhelmingly by men, who in turn are answerable to the state legislature, again composed predominantly of men. But the most significant fact for you is that what you learn here, the very texts you read, the lectures you hear, the way your studies are divided into categories and fragmented from one other, all this reflects to a very large degree neither objective reality nor an accurate picture of the past, nor a group of rigorously tested observations about human behavior. What you can learn here, and I mean not only at Douglas, but any college in any university, is how men have perceived and organized their experience, their history, their ideas or social relationships, good and evil, sickness and health, etc. When you read or hear about great issues, major texts, the mainstream of Western thoughts, you are hearing about what men, about all white men in their male subjectivity, have decided is important. Black and other minority peoples have for some time recognized that their racial and ethnic experience was not accounted for in the studies broadly labeled human, and that even the sciences can be racist. For many reasons, it has been more difficult for women to comprehend our exclusion and to realize that even the sciences can be sexist. For one thing, it is only within the last 100 years that higher education has grudgingly been opened up to women at all, even to white middle-class women. And many of us have found ourselves poring eagerly over books with title like The Descent of Man, Man and His Symbols, Irrational Man, The Phenomenon of Man, The Future of Man, Man and the Machine, From Man to Man, May Man Prevail, Man, Science and Society, or One-Dimensional Man. Books pretending to describe a human reality that does not include over one half the human species. Less than a decade ago, with the rebirth of a feminist movement in this country, women students and teachers in a number of universities began to demand and set up women's studies courses to claim a women-directed education. And despite the inevitable accusation of unscholarly, group therapy, fadism, etc., despite backlash and budget cuts, women's studies are still growing, offering to more and more women a new intellectual, grasp on their lives, new understanding of our history, a fresh vision of the human experience, and also a critical basis for evaluating what they hear and read in other courses and in the society at large. But my talk is not really about women's studies, much as I believe in their scholarly, scientific, and human necessity. While I think that any Douglas student has everything to gain by investigating and enrolling in women's studies courses, I want to suggest that there is a more essential experience that you owe yourselves, one which courses in women's studies can greatly enrich, but which finally depends on you in all your interaction with yourself and your world. This is the experience of taking responsibility toward yourselves. Our upbringing as women has so often told us that this should come second to our relationships and responsibilities to other people. We have been offered ethical models of the self-denying wife and mother, intellectual models of the brilliant but slapdash dilettante who never commits herself to anything the whole way, or the intelligent woman who denies her intelligence in order to seem more feminine, or who sits in passive silence even when she disagrees inwardly with everything that is being said around her. Responsibility to yourself means refusing to let others do your thinking, talking, and naming for you. It means learning to respect and use your own brains and instincts, hence grappling with hard work. It means that you do not treat your body as a commodity with which to purchase superficial intimacy or economic security. For our bodies to be treated as objects, our minds are in mortal danger. It means insisting that those to whom you give your friendship and love are able to respect your mind. It means being able to say, with Charlotte Bronte's Jane Eyre, "I have an inward treasure born with me, which can keep me alive if all the extraneous delights should be withheld or offered only at a price I cannot afford to give." Responsibility to yourself means that you don't fall for shallow and easy solutions, pre-digested books and ideas, weekend encounters guaranteed to change your life, taking gut courses instead of ones you know will challenge you, bluffing at school and life instead of doing solid work, marrying early as an escape from real decisions, getting pregnant as an evasion of already existing problems. It means that you refuse to sell your talents and aspirations short, simply to avoid conflict and confrontation. And this, in turn, means resisting the forces in society which say that women should be nice, play safe, have low professional expectation, drown in love and forget about work, live through others and stay in the places assigned to us. It means that we insist on a life of meaningful work, insist that work be as meaningful as love and friendship in our lives. It means, therefore, the courage to be different, not to be continuously available to others when we need time for ourselves and our work, to be able to demand of others, parents, friends, roommates, teachers, lovers, husbands, children, that they respect our sense of purpose and our integrity as persons. Women everywhere are finding the courage to do this, more and more. And we are finding that courage both in our study of women in the past who possessed it and each other as we look to other women for comradeship, community and challenge. The difference between a life lived actively and a life of passive drifting and dispersal of energy is an immense difference. Once we begin to feel committed to our lives, responsible to ourselves, we can never again be satisfied with the old, passive way.